Hello, my name is David Lankus. Welcome to my world. I'm sorry I couldn't be there in Springfield, but as will become apparent during the presentation, really I can't get much further than these four walls of my home. Get to that in a second. I get to give the end keynote, and the end keynote has one of two purposes, and usually both of them together. The first is as a sort of summary. Here's something to, you know, main points to take away from. Here's something to think about. Of course, the problem is that, once again, I'm in these walls and not those walls, and so I really can't do that. I apologize. The second idea behind the closing keynote is sort of inspirational. It's to give you some excitement, some thoughts, some encouragement, something to take away to think about and get you ready for the next time you come back in. And as I lead you, these different sessions, these in-person sessions are very important, but it's also important that we sort of keep thinking and talking and working in between the sessions. So that's my job. And so, of course, what I'm going to do to try really get you ramped up, really get you inspired, is I want to talk to you about cancer. That's right, cancer. Very great word. It's a word that comes with a lot of baggage, a lot of meaning, a lot of thought. Not always the most inspirational idea. But I want to sort of work through a little bit, because that's all I do is really report of where I am. Some thoughts that I think will apply to what you're working on, learning, and listening to, and I lead you, and what you need to think about as you move through the project. So, cancer is a word that I've always heard and thought of, and had a grandmother that, and kind of thing. But it was when I was diagnosed with cancer that I really got the impact of that word. It was on a February, it was a snowy February, and it was on a Friday, and it was a little after 4 o'clock. Now, I remember that not just because when you're told you have cancer, you remember these things, but it sort of goes with a story. So a little after 4 o'clock, a medical fellow, oncological fellow, that's a good start. Let's try it again. Greetings. I'm sorry that I can't be there in person. Welcome to my world. These four walls of my home are pretty much my world for the next year, and we'll sort of talk about why that is. But unfortunately, that means I can't get on planes and I can't come visit you. So I'm here virtually to give you the ending keynotes. And ending keynotes sort of have two purposes. The first purpose is as a summation. Here are some thoughts, there are some themes that came from the constant, you know, the, what happened this week and something to think about. I really can't do too much of that because, once again, I'm here, you're there. The second one, which I hope I can do, is to give you some thoughts and inspiration for going forward and sort of to carry you to the next in-person session. So what I want to do is I want to talk a little bit about inspiration and aspirational thoughts, something for you to chew on that as you go through your work, you can sort of think and reflect on. And I've chosen the most, you know, inspirational topic that I could think of, and that's cancer. So cancer, as you might guess, I didn't have much here, but this is cancer. These are the remains. When you lose your eyebrows is when you really know that you have cancer. It's a sort of devastating moment for me. But anyway, I want to sort of talk to you a little bit about some of the experience I've had going through cancer and how I think it relates to librarianship. And believe it or not, I think there's a lot that we can learn from it. So cancer is a word that, you know, people think of in different ways. You know, I had a grandmother with cancer. I know someone with cancer. Oh, cancer is a horrible thing. But when you hear you have cancer, it's a very, very different reaction. Sort of blood goes, drains out of your head, and you sit down, and all you can think about is, I guess I'm going to die. I remember when I got my diagnosis of cancer, it was in a hospital room. It was at Upstate Medical University. It was in February after I'd been there for a few weeks while they were trying to figure out why I had no platelets. It was on a Friday a little after 4 o'clock, and you'll see there's a reason I remember that so well. A medical fellow came in and gave me the news that after they'd looked at the biopsy results and after they'd done a lot of things, that in fact I had Hodgkin's lymphoma, a form of blood cancer, a form of immune system cancer. Now, it's an interesting thing when this happens because, like, once again, you don't really hear what's going on afterwards. But within seconds, what she said was, now, The other thing is we need to get a bone marrow biopsy to make sure it hasn't spread to your bone marrow. And since it's a Friday, we have to get it in within the next 20 minutes before the lab closes and closes for the weekend. So, Mrs. Lankus, my wife was in the room, if you would please leave, we'll get started. Within 5 minutes of telling me that I had a life-threatening disease, I was face down in a hospital bed, and my wife was a hallway away, sort of losing it, and as was I. And I'm lying face down, and the next thing I know, this medical fellow is sitting on my back with leverage trying to get into the hip bone and bore into the hip bone. And something really interesting happened in that as this was happening, the nurse, Caroline, seems like a severe person, but who's become one of my heroes, came to the head of the bed next to where I was lying. And as the doctor asked for the steel pin to drive into the hip bone, with one hand Caroline handed her the pin, and with the other she took my hand. And for the next, seemed like 15 to 20 minutes, she asked me about my job, she asked me about my kids, she asked me about where I like to vacation. She got me talking anything to distract me from the news and the procedure going on behind me. And what's amazing is as soon as that doctor had withdrawn the sample and withdrawn the needle, Carolyn let go of my hand, walked out of the room, walked down the hallway, found my wife, grabbed her by the hands, and looked my wife in the eye and said, "You are planning his funeral. Stop it." And for the next few minutes, not only did she get over the idea of how treatable Hodgkin's lymphoma was and what was going to happen, but she said, "You are the caretaker now. You are his advocate. He needs you to be strong." Now, I want you to compare this story to what happened one story above me. So I'm on the 10th floor of Upstate Medical University. Turns out the 11th and 12th floor are the Galisano's Children's Hospital at University Hospital. And something very different happens when they deliver a diagnosis. When they deliver a diagnosis, the people who come into the room are the doctor and a nurse, and they make sure the parents are there and the child and the librarian for the children's hospital. Now, why the librarian, we'll get to that in a second. So what happens is remarkably what happens with me, hopefully with a little more tact. They begin telling the parents and the child the diagnosis and see if they understand it. And as this is happening, the librarian is sitting there writing down what's happening. Mary Laverty, who's the librarian, is writing down the keynotes: Hodgkin's lymphoma, cancer, disease, chemo, treatment, what have you. And after the doctor and after the nurse leave, Mary leaves, and she takes out an iPad, and she goes onto the internet, onto Google, and she begins to search every one of those keywords. And this iPad is different because it has a unique IP address from any other IP at the hospital, so it gets out of the filter bubble. And after she's gone through the first 10 results of every one of these keywords, she goes back and sits with the parents and the child, if the child's old enough, and she goes through those top 10 results. This one's a sponsored link. This one I wouldn't trust. This one is a very reputable source. Why does she do this? Because the parents do exactly what I did 10 minutes after this thing was removed from my hip joint, which we pick up our phone, we pick up our computer, and we begin searching. And the doctors know this, and the nurses know this. And so the librarian's there to walk them through the process to, at this most crucial time in their life, at this most crisis time in their life, to help them walk through and make sense of where they can get information, where they can get more resources, and sometimes just to listen. And then over the weeks, that child will get a few things. They'll get an Xbox in their room to distract them. By the way, me, I get to pay $10 a day to get, like, you know, USA Network. Very exciting. They'll also begin to bring in books, and books that aren't organized by topic and subject, but are paired between parent and child. So the child will get a picture book, if they're young, that walks them through what's going to happen to them, what's this procedure. And the parents get information from Medline and adult materials and things that they can work through and think about. And so what's interesting about this is this didn't happen because of an organizational structure. This didn't happen because a doctor thought this was a brilliant idea. This happened because of a really remarkable librarian, Mary, who walked in and knew this was important and began talking to the doctors, began going on the rounds with the doctors, began talking to the head of medicine, began having receptions in the library, in the children's hospital, that every week the head of medicine and the president of the hospital would come to and expect their doctors to come to. She networked. She worked with the doctors. She understood and taught, and pretty soon the doctors were writing out prescriptions for the library, for the Family Resource Center. Because Mary understood something that you and I, Lead You, need to understand very well. And that is, whatever you're building, a website, a collection, it's not a digital library. It's not a collection. That building that you're going to go back to, those books and materials and DVDs and licensed databases, that's not your collection. That Family Resource Center where it had the picture books and the grown-up materials and such, that's not the collection. The kid who has cancer and his parents, that's the collection. The doctor who knows how to treat, that's the collection. The nurses who have to provide information at 2 in the morning and comfort children and comfort adults who don't know if they're going to live past 6 months, that's the collection. And we see this in places not just like medical settings, to take it into a little more enjoyable setting. You see this in places like Chattanooga Public Library, in their youth services area on the fourth floor, where Justin, the youth services librarian, has transformed this from a place for reading hours and a place for quiet contemplation into a hands-on discovery area. His model was a hands-on science museum. So, for example, when they thought, you know, kids want to play and build things, let's get a 3D printer. You know what he did? Well, the first thing he did is he moved his office from behind the door out into the public area. He said, why shouldn't people see the work I do for the people who are doing them? And he put that printer right in a public area. And then you know what he did? He tried to figure out how to use it. And as kids would go by, as parents would go by, as teens would go by, he would invite them to, I don't know, what do you think? Can we try this? What do you want? You want to try that? He said at one point he had to take a chisel to get the plastic off the printing area. But he learned in public and he learned in a group. And he creates these environments. In the summer, he holds a summer camp, a dev camp, where he brings in developers and app developers and technology trainers and people from the high schools, and he has a four-week session with teenagers where they get in and they develop software. They're doing what you're doing. Now, sometimes that's so the kids have something to do and the parents can get away, but oftentimes what he's found is it builds these relationships that last well beyond the 4 weeks. He realizes that what he's doing in those 4 weeks is collection development. He's developing the youth and the instructors and the teachers and the librarians all working together. He's looking at the community as his collection and does it in a very real way. We see universities, libraries that are starting concierge services. Concierge services where as you're admitted as a freshman, you are assigned a librarian, your concierge librarian. And within the first week of going to campus, you meet and sit down with that librarian. And you know what you don't talk about with that librarian? The library. This isn't an orientation session. Hello, welcome, you're one of 10. This is our databases. These are our books. These are our materials. They don't do that. They sit down and they instead say, what's your schedule? Ooh, this is a tough class. Oh, they require these texts. Do you know how to get these texts? By the way, you don't have to buy this one. We have this as an e-text. Oh, this is what a registrar is. This is what a bursar is. For the next meeting, for the next week that they develop a relationship into the next semester and the next years, they're teaching the students how to hack the information systems of the university, how to understand and bring these together. This is very different than the idea of we host a murder in our library so people can learn where fiction is and learn where, you know, the 400s are, or learn what this LC system is. In I Lead You, in earlier sessions, we developed a really great phrase, pizza, pizza book. And the idea was a great video, but what it comes down to is it's like we throw a pizza party. All the students love pizza, so they come into the library and we say, have some pizza, and by the way, have a book. It's like this lost leader, this switcheroo, where they come in and since we got them, we'll show them how to use this stuff. That's the exact opposite of what's happening with these concierge services. They're starting with the community and what the community needs to know. And as the students learn how to use resources and how to use each other and how to use experts and how to talk to professors, the professors start coming in and utilizing the services, and they begin doing things like monitoring the chat feed of courses. Now, I give lectures, I do this kind of thing, and I walk back and forth, and I'll say things that I think are right, and then I'll stop every so often and go, what was that date? What was that name? I'm not sure if that's exactly right. Tweet that out. And we tweet it out with a hashtag, and a librarian sitting there, and they'll go out and do the reference work and tweet back the answers. the idea is they are doing collection development. I'm their collection. The students are their collections. In England, they've taken and transformed their business reading area. Their business reading area used to be the fabulous, here are the million-dollar databases, and here you find the newspapers, and here's books on this, and here are resources. And the British Library wanted to do something very different, because what the British Library wanted to do was incent new business and new entrepreneurship. And the first thing they did was they took all their reference librarians, they dragged them away from the door. They said, reference librarians are not good greeters. They don't do well sitting at the wall going, please, this way. It's sort of a Walmart greeter thing. Because they're too smart for that. They're better than that. They're more skilled than that. So what they took is all their reference librarians and they got them business planning certification. They became certified business planners. So if someone came in and said, I'm interested in starting a new business, the librarian could sit with them in a closed room and talk about intellectual property, talk about you need business plans. These are the kinds of things. Begin networking with mentors or, hey, did you know these other people are working on those areas and they're willing to meet and talk with you to provide space and such. Because they understood that what these librarians were doing was collection development. The collection is the community. I'm going to say this over and over and over and over again. They began having lectures. They began bringing in and having in-residence entrepreneurs to talk to these folks. People began to understand that the reason you went here was not to read or find out what had happened in business, but to be in the place that was creating what business would look like. These are all examples of how we need to think differently about libraries. So those websites that you're building, those projects that you're building, if you're doing that without the community involvement, if you're doing that without direct input, who are you building it for and hoping that they're going to come? The buildings that you're going back to, the materials, all those things, they're great, they're powerful. It's important that we as librarians, whether, by the way, in name, in title, in spirit, we as librarians know how to use them and organize them. But how to organize them and use them for what? What is our aim? Our ultimate aim is to improve the communities we work with, to improve the society that we're in. That means our focus and what we do on a daily basis is not the stuff and the copy machine and this. It's the people. It's what they can do. It's their dreams and their aspirations, and that's what makes us librarians, and that's what our collection's about. Now, you can't begin a story with cancer and not end it with sort of where you are, right? Sort of handle that. So I want to talk a little bit about where I am. Because what happened was after that wonderful, by the way, biopsy, which was lovely, negative, I went through 6 months of chemotherapy, 2 months of thinking that I was doing well, and then in October of last year, I found myself lying on a surgeon's table where they flipped me sideways, cut a hole through my ribs, deflated a lung, and pulled out a lymph node from the base of my chest. That's what that scar is there. And they found that, in fact, Hodgkin's lymphoma was not quite done with me yet. Now, what that meant was that I had to go through more extreme chemo. In fact, so extreme that they call it lethal chemotherapy. It's lethal in that not only will it kill the cancer, and by the way, most of your GI tract, it also will take out your bone marrow. And without your bone marrow, you can't do things like make blood cells, which you need. Now, what's amazing is I did that. I went through and did a stem cell transplant, and the stem cell transplant means that I have a compromised immune system, which means that I can't go to crowds, I can't get on airplanes, and I can't join you. That's why this is my world. But something I want to leave you with is not how's it going and did it work. I don't know yet. I won't know for another 3 months whether it worked. I won't know for another 5 years. I frankly will never know if it worked until it either comes back or I die without it. But here's what I want you to think about. There is nothing good about cancer. Cancer doesn't teach anything. Cancer doesn't preach. Cancer doesn't inspire. Cancer doesn't help. Cancer does one thing. Cancer kills. But if there's one joy that comes from cancer, it's exposing the network of love and caring and the people around you who will support you. And I have to say that I have seen the most glorious, wonderful, amazing aspects of our profession come about through this entire process, including, by the way, many people in that room that I owe dearly. What happens with cancer is that people come out and say, how can I help you? And librarians have done everything from feed my family to do reference work and send me great new materials on clinical trials to simply on Facebook going, I'm thinking about you, which may sound tiny. But when you're sitting there and you can't eat and you're really nauseous and your bones are going to break, what that little Facebook message means is you're still important. You still matter. Now, the reason I raise this is that what my experience has shown me is that librarians can be an amazing force. They reached out, they supported, and they brought me through some of the hardest times of my life. But I want you to think not, how could I be part of supporting Dave? I want you to think about your communities, your collection for a moment, someone you know. Somewhere in your community, a student, a teacher, a professor, a mother, a father, a daughter, a grandparent, a colleague, someone has cancer right now. And if you're ready to help them, that's not enough. It's not enough to say, I'll wait. If you need me, come get me. It's not enough to say, it's 4 o'clock, by the way, we've got to go grab this. I'm sorry about the rest of your life. They need someone to listen to them. And there are other people in the community that are suffering with joblessness or homelessness or abuse. They're struggling with drug addiction. They're struggling with school. They're struggling with finding out what they want to be in life. They're struggling with divorce. They're struggling in some way. And other members of your community are simply sitting with a dream and no way to fulfill it. They can't even articulate how they could make the world better. If you want to be a brilliant librarian, if you want to make a difference in people's lives, if you want to sit there and be that control network, you must be active. You must see your community as your collection, and you must be into collection development every day, not sitting behind a desk, not being unbiased and waiting for someone to come to you and ask for help, but being out there and saying, I'm here. You're important. What do you want to do today? Every day, we have the luxury and the amazing vocation of improving the societies that we are a part of. The reason that libraries are important are because of librarians, and the reason librarians are important is because we are the curators and stewards of our community's aspirations and goals. We have the ability to help the sick. We have the ability to cure injustice. We have the ability to help immigrants come from different populations. I saw a brilliant video the other day about the St. Paul Library reaching out to immigrant populations and teaching them the computer basics, language basics, how to apply for jobs. And the director of the library said, we are not in the book business. We are in the St. Paul business. You are not in the library business. You are not in the book business. You are not in the building business. You're not in the website business. You're in the community business. Your job every day is to think, how can I make this community better? And not to do something to the community. And not to wait for the community to even ask, but to go out to partner to say, you are important. My thoughts are with you and my skills are at your disposal. What I want you to think about, what I want you to take away from I Lead You, what I want you to focus on is as you're working on these projects, make them important. As you're working on these projects, make them useful. As you're working on these projects, make them gorgeous and beautiful and efficient, but make them about your collection, which is your community. Make them about improving society. Stand up at the end of I Lead You and say, here is what I have done, and here's whose life is better because of it. We can do that together. You have shown me already through this profession and through the people standing around you, through your mentors and your instructors, whom I love dearly, because they every day wake up and know that librarians change the world. And that's what we're all about. Thank you very much.